Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Sarah Gaughan. Let's get into our first news story of today. And what can I say except it seems very much like Eskom doesn't want us to love them. Of course, many South Africans have been enjoying the fact that this year we've had much, much less load shedding than last year. We have not had load shedding for, I'm not sure, I think it's more than 3 months now. So that's big cause to celebrate. Eskom seems to have made some improvements in their ability to keep the electricity flowing in terms of what's called the energy availability factor, which is sort of what percentage of their power plants are working at any one time. That seems to have improved somewhat. But there is bad news from the Eskom side. A leaked document is being reported in the media, which talks a little bit about Eskom's planned tariff hikes for the next couple of years. Now, this document claims to suggest that in 2025-2026 financial year, Eskom will look at a tariff increase of 36%, the year after 11.8%, and the year after that 9%. Now, this is already after the fact that between 2007 and 2022, the average Eskom tariff increased by 450%. While inflation was only about 129%. So it was like, what, something like three, four times what inflation was. Now, this is quite simply, I suppose, because firstly, South Africa did actually have relatively cheap electricity back in 2007. And so in a sense, I think Eskom was needing to simply adjust itself to be up to what it actually should have probably been charging for electricity all along. But I suspect we also are past that point. I am still very skeptical that Eskom has made major improvements in its efficiency. And one wonders whether South Africans who are already pretty financially stretched are actually going to be able to pay this, or whether they will simply take other alternatives. I can see the wealthy going off-grid, as many already have begun to do, by purchasing sort of battery systems, solar power systems, that kind of thing. And I can see the poor simply collecting illegally, as many South Africans already do. There's also, of course, the fact that there are some parts of the country who are direct Eskom customers who, for example, there's quite a lot of people in Soweto who refuse to pay their bills entirely. And then you have entire municipalities who are not paying their bills, increasing, interestingly, of course, the city of Johannesburg recently. To make matters worse, these are direct tariffs from Eskom. In other words, if you are charged by a municipality rather than by Eskom, your tariff increase may be even greater than 36% next year. So, Sara, what do you make of this? I mean, this is obviously because they're trying to get out of the debt hole that Eskom is in, but I'm skeptical that these higher prices will actually fix the problem.
Well, I think it's probably absolutely reflective of the fact of trying to resolve a financial crisis that was set in motion by all the things that were done wrong that caused Eskom to near collapse in the first place. I think it's that simple. I think we have the culture of non-payment. I think we also have the problem that we're supplying less electricity, which means that probably explains why we haven't had load. One of the reasons why we haven't had load shedding, together with improved planned maintenance, etc. But I know there's been a warning that if the mining industry climbs out of recession, we'll hit load shedding again, because then the demand will again exceed the supply, and it'll be laid bare again. So I think, you know, much as whatever price our electricity might have been comparative to much of the rest of the world, whatever problems we've had, there is just no way it's going to be resolved with the sort of increase that they're envisaging for next year.
Exactly. I think Eskom has to do a lot more to prove that it's actually more efficient, more reliable, before it can begin to start jacking up its price. Because right now we've got, you know, our standards are so low that with the electricity mostly flowing most of the time, we're suddenly going, oh, well, you know, maybe Eskom's not so bad. But actually, I think until Eskom greatly improves its level of efficiency, it's really not going to get out of any financial hole that it's currently in. Okay, let's move overseas for a story that's sort of made some headlines in the international news, but it still hasn't seemed to have made that big of a splash. And that is what's going on in Bangladesh. So Bangladesh is a relatively small but a very densely populated country, kind of nestled in between India. And Bangladesh has just overthrown its government through essentially a popular revolution. Now, what sparked the protests that eventually caused this this revolt were the issue of job reservations. In Bangladesh, all sorts of special interest groups and people who the government thought should receive basically a preference for jobs in government had there were lots of quotas. Something like more than half of all government jobs had to be filled by someone to fulfill a quota. So these quotas targeted ethnic minorities in Bangladesh, who there's relatively few of. Most of the population is Bengali. Some of them were aimed at women. But the most annoying one that irritated people was that people whose fathers or grandfathers were fighters in the independence struggle would get preference for government jobs, and there needed to be a certain quota of them. In fact, that quota was as high as 30% until just a couple of weeks ago. This sparked major protests by students who felt like they were being locked out of some of the best jobs and the most stable jobs in the country, those being in the government sector. They started protesting, demanding that government appoint people on merit alone. When the army and police tried to crack down on these protests with violence, I think more than 100 people were killed over the last couple of weeks during the protests. The protests only grew in size and intensity until they essentially forced the resignation of the Prime Minister of Bangladesh on Monday. The country is in a fair state of chaos now because the army claims that it is forming an interim government until new elections can be held. But there's also a lot of distrust of the army by student protesters who blame them for the violence that took place. So a lot of dangerous things going on there. But I think, Sara, for us in South Africa, you know, we also have a government which is, I think, not quite as crazy in its level of social engineering and, you know, reserving jobs for this and that and trying to make society look exactly a certain way. But I think that there's a sort of very real lesson to be learned here about, you know, how ineffective some of these policies are and how much frustration they can cause. What do you make of this?
I think what it does more than anything is it shows that the sort of liberation, the Party of Liberation, which she represented, her father was the founder of this, you know, of the party and accordingly pretty much of the state, that sort of preference, which is really it has no social basis. It's nationalist grandstanding, and it's also it's something of an insult to Bangladeshis who couldn't have been involved in the actual creation of the state in the battle against Pakistan. It means that creates a sort of almost like a royalty based on very often a level of mythology and, you know, as every generation gets further away from it. It becomes more and more repulsive to bear. And I think to some extent, there's an element of that that should exercise the minds of South Africans, even if we're not as with a history of cadre deployment in the public sector and the ructions that's causing this society from an efficiency and effectiveness point of view, there are some considerations for our government to bear in mind.
I think also Bangladesh over the last couple of years has been having enormous amounts of economic growth. We're talking about sort of 5-6%. It's forecast to sort of be around 6% for the next couple of years, although I suspect this incident may put a bit of a dent in that. But, as people's expectations rise and as people look for, you know, a better life for themselves, particularly presumably a lot of these students were the children of families who were beginning to make it. Mm. Now the old sclerotic political system that essentially just favored a connected few was locking them out, and that caused them to take to the streets. And I think that's a very important lesson for South Africans to take, is that, you know, you need to actually have an open system that allows people to rise up through the economy, through society, or else you're going to have lots of social dysfunction. Okay, Last story. This has been sort of an ongoing thing that's mostly been on social media, but it's also broken into the mainstream news a bit, and that is the fuss about the winner of or participant of Miss South Africa, a woman with a Nigerian name who is, by all accounts, South African, was accused of not being South African, of not being a South African citizen due to her name and nothing else, including by Sports, Arts and Culture Minister Gayton McKenzie, who has kind of been promising an investigation into whether this woman is actually a South African citizen. Now, this distresses me very much because there's so far no real evidence that she was born anywhere but South Africa and that she hasn't lived in her whole life here. I believe the news reports that she's a dual citizen of both Nigeria and South Africa because her father is Nigerian. The reporting seems to have been a bit confused about whether her mother is South African or Mozambican. But the point being, she clearly is a South African in the fact that she's lived here most of her life. Her parents, I think, were probably here legally. And when the Department of Home Affairs was contacted to kind of resolve this issue, they just said they can't because of they can't just talk about people's personal details. I don't know if that's legally true or not, but Sara, this kind of there's a sort of ugliness to this whole thing, which is that someone is essentially being kind of singled out because they have a foreign-sounding name. What do you make of this?
I think it really helps to focus us on the debate about prejudice in general, whether it be xenophobia, whether it be racism. I mean, racism, as we know, is talked about all the time, but it's never really debated. It's never really dissected. And it's never really discussed the fact that, you know, it's the ability to be racist or to be suffer from racism is not confined to specific groups. It mutates, it changes, it has different causes, it can reflect from one side to the other. And we've tended to avoid that. We've tended to make distinctions. I mean, Julius Malema said, you know, she's South African and she was born here and that's the end of it, which is, should be correct at the very least. However, you know, what he said about people whose origins theoretically are 1652, even though they may not be or very unlikely to be having that sort of debate is not a debate. That's just an exhibition of bigotry. And if it helps us to advance the conversation against bigotry and racism, let's have it.
Exactly. I think that this does us no good and is very ugly. And it's a rare time that I find myself kind of in agreement with the EFF, which is, shall we say, not a very common occurrence. But anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.